Next case is 06-223, Jennifer Snyder versus American Family Insurance Company. Mr. Van Am.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm Tim Van Emmen. I represent Jennifer Snyder in this matter. This case arises out of an injury that Ms. Snyder sustained when a police cruiser drove over a wet lawn in a negligent fashion and hit her when she was a pedestrian. The accident occurred in November of 2002. The uninsured motorist statute at issue in this case is the one that is currently in effect and became effective in October of 2001, so 13 months prior to the accident. And interestingly, and I think somewhat instructive, is the fact that the uninsured motorist policy of American Family in this case was created in January of 1996. That's evident from the supplement to the record. The policy clearly indicates on page 3 and 4 that that uninsured motorist provision was drafted in January of 1996. Now, obviously in a liability setting, one cannot recover against a governmentally immune tortfeasor. But this all changed in 2001 when the legislature enacted the current version of 3937.18, part B5, where it states an uninsured motorist is the owner or operator of a motor vehicle if any of the following conditions apply. And number 5 happens to be the owner or operator has immunity under Chapter 2744 of the revised code. There are no qualifiers, no exceptions to this provision of a definition of an uninsured motorist. So the legislature defined an uninsured motorist as any tortfeasor who has governmental immunity. Where would we be in this case if American Family had a specific exclusion in its policy that said, quote, we don't pay uninsured motorist benefits if the tortfeasor has governmental immunity, end quote. Where would we be if American Family had a definition in its policy which said, quote, an uninsured motorist does not include a governmentally immune tortfeasor? I would suggest that this court would strike down such a provision as being directly contrary to 3937.18b5, which defines a governmentally immune tortfeasor as an uninsured motorist. After all, this court held in Ross versus Farmers that provisions of an auto policy that vary from statutory requirements are unenforceable, and I believe that's where we are in this case. What American Family can't do directly, it certainly shouldn't be able to do indirectly or through the back door. American Family's position is that it is allowed to redefine what the legislature has clearly defined. It wants this court to cross out Section B5 of the uninsured motorist statute, which then would make the statute or that portion of the statute completely meaningless, which unfortunately is what the Court of Appeals did when it legislated from the bench and with a stroke of a pen just eliminated Section B5 of the uninsured motorist statute.
Counsel, this particular incarnation of the statute was enacted, went into effect in?
October of 2001.
Okay, and it was enacted, if I'm not mistaken, to deal exactly with this problem, wasn't it? The people hit by fire trucks and
exactly,
those
yeah.
kinds of things not only couldn't recover from the government, but then they were foreclosed from getting any recovery under their own policy under the uninsured and underinsured motorists.
That's exactly correct, Your Honor. The legislature made a public policy decision that all of the citizens of Ohio should be allowed to recover, if not directly from the tortfeasor, since they couldn't because the tortfeasor might be governmentally immune from their own uninsured motorist carrier, and that's why they defined it the way they did. And
prior to this enactment, you would agree your client would have had no right of recovery against their insurer?
Unless the policy somehow had wording that would allow it. You know, we get into the murkiness and the quagmire of legally entitled to recover, which we'll talk about, but that's correct, Your Honor. And what you say is especially important, I think, given the court's recent ruling, this court's recent ruling in Colbert versus City of Cleveland, where this court expanded the definition of an emergency run, which thereby expanded governmental immunity. So we have potentially more citizens of this state who might be injured by tortfeasors who become governmentally immune because they now qualify for an emergency run. And I think the legislature, in its wisdom, correctly set the statute up so that people can recover under their uninsured motorist policy.
And after this enactment, at a later point in time, the legislature took away the requirement that uninsured and underinsured motorist coverage be offered.
That's correct.
But did they leave in place the definition of if it's there, what it has to be?
That's correct, Your Honor. The appellee in the case, American Family, mentions a number of times in its briefs that the legislature changed the law and that uninsured motorist coverage no longer needs to be offered. Well, that's irrelevant. It was offered in this case, and once you offer it, now you're in the statute, and you've got to stay there, and you've got to obey it.
How did the Court of Appeals get around the specific language that requires government immunity to be considered? It seemed to me they were basically saying that you could contract that away even though that was in the statutory definition?
Your Honor, I'm still scratching my head how they did it, but the way they purported to do it was by latching on to section, I believe it is D of the statute, which provides that an insured, excuse me, not section D, section I, which allows the insurance carriers to include conditions and limitations of coverage. And the Court of Appeals latched on to the Webb decision, which talks about legally entitled to recover. So they say that since you cannot legally recover, or you're not legally entitled to recover from a governmentally immune tortfeasor, that is enough to throw out this case. But that flies in the face of B5, which says an uninsured motorist is someone that has governmental immunity.
Do we have any argument of specific controlling over more general language?
Yes, we do. And I think section B5 is certainly specific compared to a general allowance of insurance companies to have specific exclusions or limitations. And that's the other point, that part of the statute that allows the insurance carriers to have additional limitations, the statute says they have to be specific. Well, legally entitled to recover isn't specific of much of anything, especially given the history of the meaning of that phrase changing, you know, constantly over the last 10 or 15 years. And the legislature specifically took that language out of the statute. It used to be in the statute. Legally entitled to recover used to be in the statute. They took it out for a reason because it was such a mess. And now the statute only says that the claimant need only prove the elements of the claim necessary to recover. And in this case, those things are stipulated, of all things. Duty, breach of duty, damages and causation, that's all stipulated in this case. In fact, the actual amount of damages, $90,000, is stipulated in this case. So it's our position that that's the end of the story. We've got a governmentally immune tortfeasor. That's an uninsured motorist. All the elements of the claim, including the amount of the damages, have been stipulated. The case should be over with that situation.
Unless we say that elements of the claim refer to the facts.
I'm sorry?
Unless we determine that the elements of the claim refers to the facts and not to the legal aspect of the claim.
Well, in this case, the facts have been stipulated.
Right.
So,
but for purposes of defining that term, applying that term, we look not just at this case,
right,
but how that definition is going to apply to future cases as a standard.
Well,
I mean, one could miss the statute of limitations and still be able to prove the facts of the claim.
Right.
That's my point, is that's
well, in that respect, although I don't think the court should latch on to any notion of this legally entitled to recover language, I suppose the court could hold that the appellee's first proposition of law could be adopted, but with one phrase added at the end of it, and that being, so long as the term legally entitled to recover is defined. Number one, it's got to be defined because the statute requires the insurers to define their specific limitations. So long as it is defined, and except that there shall be no limitations related to the conditions or uninsured motorists set forth in 3937.18b. In other words, 3937.18b is untouchable. I mean, the legislature defined it. There shouldn't be any way, no matter how creative, that an insurance company should be allowed to get around that.
Isn't the rule of law that you want us to write to the effect that you cannot, by contract, agree to something that's provided for in the law?
That's correct, Your Honor, in essence.
But that isn't a new law, is it?
Well, I guess
it's been misapplied maybe in this case, but it isn't anything novel.
I guess it's nothing novel, but we're here, and the Court of Appeals gave a bad result, so we have to put it back to where it should be. If an insurance company can do what they did in this case, then they could take any of the five items that the legislature defines as an uninsured motorist and get rid of them.
Write everything out of the
statute. They could just totally write out Section B of 3937.18. I mean, the very first one defines an uninsured motorist as the owner or the tortfeasor having no liability insurance. Well, by American Family's logic, they could have a provision in their policy that says, but there is no uninsured motorist coverage if the tortfeasor doesn't have liability coverage. It's just nonsensical. They could take all five of those things, including the one regarding governmental immunity, and write it out of the policy. I mean, there has to be some rules, and the legislature created the rules. And there, you know, while I personally would disagree with some of the things in this statute, this statute in this respect, at least as far as the issues in this case, is crystal clear. There's no room for maneuvering. I'd like to reserve, if I could, 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Van Emmon. Mr. Maddox.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court, counsel. My name is Mark Maddox. I have the privilege of representing the American Family Insurance Company in this case. Just as January marked the dawn of a new day for this court with the addition of Justice Cupp, so did the 2001 amendments to the uninsured motorist statute mark the dawn of a new day for Ohio consumers in the insurance industry. For over 20 years, this court and the legislature have gone back and forth over the meaning and scope of the uninsured motorist statute 3937.18. This court would frequently issue decisions interpreting the scope of that statute, and the legislature frequently would respond with an amendment to the statute. I have been practicing insurance defense law for over 20 years, and for my entire career, the uncertain state of the law in this area has caused much gnashing of the teeth and rending of garments by those charged with the duty to determine the scope of the then state-required uninsured motorist coverage. And while I submit that the gnashing of the teeth and the rending of the garments undoubtedly was good for dentists and tailors and perhaps even lawyers, Ohio consumers in the Ohio insurance industry were at a disadvantage because of the uncertain and ever-changing state of the law.
Well, taking that line of thought, we seem to have a very certain statement that defines what an uninsured motorist is.
Absolutely.
And why should we not follow that clear statement of law?
I'm not suggesting that you shouldn't. I'm not saying, I did argue in the court, in the trial court and in the Court of Appeals that the City of Columbus was self-insured and therefore it was not an uninsured motorist. That issue is not before this court. For purposes of this argument, you can assume that Officer Casto and the City of Columbus were uninsured motorists, but that doesn't end the inquiry. just like it didn't end the inquiry in any other case where there's an uninsured motorist. You still have to prove legal entitlement to recovery from that uninsured motorist.
What's the point of defining, for purposes of uninsured motorist coverage, someone who's subject to government immunity if it has no meaning, if you can contract it away? Why even define it?
Two points. Number one, I believe, and the legislature would be the one to speak to it, but I believe that that provision was put in there because there is a line of case law that talks about whether a governmental entity is self-insured for purposes of the uninsured motorist statute. There's a Corson case out of Cincinnati that deals with that proposition. The American Family policy in this very case, if you look at the supplement at page S8, defines an uninsured motorist as any car owned by the government. I'm not here arguing that that's an enforceable position. That provision is contrary to what the statute says. Statute says a governmental entity is an uninsured motorist. We accept that. But that is merely the floor, as the Court of Appeals noted.
Do you know of any insurance policy that does not have language legally entitled to recover?
The only other one I'm aware of, Your Honor, is the policy involved in State Farm versus Webb, which had the term legally entitled to collect.
So basically, every single insurance policy that I've ever heard of, and you've probably ever heard of, under your version, says that if you have governmental immunity, you still can't collect.
You still can't collect, and you know why? Because it's a universal maxim of Ohio insurance law, as noted by this court in State Farm versus Webb, that the insurance company should be able to raise the same defenses as the alleged tortfeasor.
Then what was the whole purpose of putting that in the statute?
The whole purpose of putting that in the statute was to eliminate this confusion over whether a self-insured governmental vehicle is an uninsured motorist or not.
But it didn't matter because you can't recover them against them whether they're self-insured or whether
if the policy says that, and you're right, all the policies I've seen say that. That doesn't mean an insurance company couldn't draft something different to respond to a need in the marketplace.
So it was still a vain act. It didn't matter. Put that language
in. Depending on
matter.
What the insurance companies do. They left it. They disengaged. They withdrew from this whole debate, really, the legislature did. They say, look, we're not going to impose our will upon you folks anymore because of the confusion that this has created. We're going to say these are the minimal elements. Get through the minimal elements of your claim. And then, under subdivision I, the insurance company is free to add exclusionary or limiting language, which, of course, they've done. So you have to give meaning to both. And if you say, well, uninsured motorist, all you got to do is prove you're an uninsured motorist and you can collect, well, then you give no meaning to I. Insurance company, in fact, can't go back and have exclusionary or limiting language.
Following up on what Justice Stratton's been asking you, would you agree that the legislature thought they fixed this in terms of making uninsured motorist coverage available when the tortfeasor was had governmental immunity?
I don't know if they thought they fixed it. I think they left it up to the, you know, they fixed it in the sense that we're defining this as an uninsured motorist.
Isn't that what they were trying to do, though?
I think they were trying to leave it up to the insurance companies to decide, hey, look, you guys don't have to offer this at all, or if you do, you can limit it, as long as it doesn't contradict the statute. And certainly saying, well, the fact that a governmental entity is an uninsured motorist is not the same thing
now,
as saying you're legally entitled to recovery.
You lost me on the, you don't have to offer it at all. That's the later, that doesn't affect this case at all.
But all the prior case law that talked about what insurance companies had to do were premised on trying to give effect to that public policy that this is a mandatory offering. And that public policy reasoning is now gone.
But that doesn't affect this case.
I'm not sure what you're saying. I think it does, but I think it demonstrates the legislature withdrawing from this arena and leaving it to the insurance
companies.
That's
after the fact of this case, though.
What's after the fact of this case?
They're leaving it up to the insurance companies whether they offer the coverage or not.
Well, the 2001 amendments preceded this act, the
right.
Accident involved in this case.
But I thought you were referring to the fact that they're no longer required to offer uninsured motorist coverage.
I referred to that as evidence of the withdrawal from the legislature from this arena, saying we're going to leave this up to the insurance companies to draft, you know, the exclusions they want to draft in their insurance policies, if they want to offer this at all. Am I missing? I don't feel like I'm responding to you properly, Your Honor. In any event, when the legislature made these amendments, they said they did it for three different reasons. Certainly one was to supersede certain rulings of this court, and they specified that. The other was to protect and preserve reasonable insurance rates in Ohio. And the third was to express Ohio's public policy that UM coverage was no longer going to be required by any insurance company at all, and to eliminate coverage imposed by law, which is exactly what's trying to happen here. It's trying to say, well, we're going to impose it by law because it's an uninsured motorist and you can't...
Okay, I'm still troubled with your pronouns. You said when the legislature did this. Aren't you now talking about what they did in response to a number of decisions in this court where they took away the requirement, the mandatory offering of uninsured motorist coverage?
In the uncodified law to the amendments to 2001, the legislature set forth in two different parts certain particular case law, including Linko and a number of other cases, right, that deal with the mandatory offering requirement, but also addressed other decisions of this court. So I don't think it was limited to simply the mandatory offering requirement.
You're basically
for instance, the specific authority for the exclusionary limiting language.
This accident happened after mandatory UM was withdrawn.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
And let's think about it, really, compared today versus 1990. Back in 1990, you had to offer uninsured motorist coverage, and there was no statutory language explicitly permitting exclusions and limitations. Yet in 1990, this court found that the term legally entitled to recover excluded any claims by a fellow employee, and we've talked a lot about political immunity in this case, but there's also fellow employee immunity involved in this case. And in Webb, this court said legally entitled to recover means you can't recover UM if the claim is barred by a fellow employee immunity. And that's exactly what we've got here. Yet the situation is even enhanced because no longer are we required to offer the uninsured motorist, and there is now specific statutory language that permits us to exclude or limit the coverage. And yet, appellant urges an opposite result than that obtained in Webb, and that simply makes no sense. It's an absurd result, and it would create a special class of claimants. Public employees injured by other public employees could make an uninsured motorist claim, and no private employee could make the same claim. And why is that? Well, the public employee has the political immunity. And according to appellant's logic, that makes him an uninsured motorist and you can recover damages. A private employee wouldn't have that same immunity, would he? But the fellow immunity law would still apply to prevent an action by the one employee against the other. But that employee couldn't recover underinsured motorist coverage. Certainly, there is nothing in the legislative history, the uncodified law, that would suggest that the legislature intended that result. They did not intend to create a special class of claimants in this case.
Counsel, I'm still trying to understand the distinction between the legally entitled to recover language in the policy and B5. I mean, is it not true that the language of the policy just quoted reads out or conflicts or takes out B5?
In no way, because all B5 does is define what is an uninsured motorist.
It says for purposes of any uninsured motorist coverage included. An uninsured motorist is the owner of a motor vehicle if any of the following applies. So if any of the following applies, including the owner has immunity, governmental immunity,
right,
that person falls within the B category.
That's correct.
B
and
category.
He's an uninsured motorist.
Right.
And nothing
then,
about, I'm sorry, go ahead.
But then the language that you're using, legally entitled to recover.
From the uninsured motorist.
Right. You could never have a B5 person getting uninsured motorist coverage,
under this particular policy, that's right, or under any policy that I'm aware of, as Justice Stratton aptly pointed out.
So
but that's not to say the industry couldn't respond to a consumer demand by withdrawing that.
Well, and this language preceded the statute, is that correct?
It did. It was in the policy before, and it remains in the policy.
So it could, I mean, we could say that basically the General Assembly has in B5 created the situation where we have a specific statutory provision, and this old language does conflict with this specific statutory provision.
It doesn't, because the legally entitled to recover language doesn't say the government employee is not an uninsured motorist. That's all it says, is that the government employee is an uninsured motorist, period. That's all B5 says.
But it invalidates the individual
it does not.
From coverage.
It just prevents the claim from going forward, even though it's an uninsured motorist.
Invalidating the coverage.
It doesn't invalidate the coverage. The coverage never attached because they were never legally entitled to recover from the uninsured motorist in the first instance. The coverage is still there.
Right. Well, I guess
that just doesn't apply.
That's a distinction that I'm having trouble with, but go ahead.
No unfairness results from the Court of Appeals decision in this case. As I noted earlier, the universal maxim in the law is that insurance companies are permitted to assert the same defenses that the tortfeasor would be entitled to assert. In this case, Officer Castro, in addition to the political immunity, could also assert the fellow employee immunity and bar the claim.
Yeah, your argument there seems to be that if there was no insurance involved at all and injured person sued the city and sued the officer here, city would raise immunity and the officer would raise immunity and they would not be able to recover.
If it was a private citizen, you're right, Your Honor.
Right, but here, the application statute for which the appellant argues would place somebody in an uninsured motorist situation in a different position than that.
That's correct.
And would permit them to recover against a city that has immunity against a private citizen where there's no insurance.
The public employee would be able to recover where the private would not.
Right, which would seem to be, I guess your argument would be that seems somehow unfair, at least.
Well, it is unfair, and there's no indication the legislature intended such an absurd result. The unfairness that would result would be if you were to impose coverage in this case where it clearly was not intended and where there was no premium paid for the coverage in the first place. The appellant does have a remedy in this case through Bureau of Workers' Compensation. So it's not like it is unfair to deny the claim in this case. It gives meaning to the contract the parties have. It gives a meaning to their intention that they were not going to cover this thing, this kind of an accident.
Hey, well, you want to talk about fairness and unfairness and what's equitable and what isn't. Under your interpretation, if a citizen is injured by an immune employee when they're driving their car, and the immune employee, let's make it the snowplow,
sure,
comes through a red light and hits someone. So there's no fellow employee issue. There would still be no recovery.
There would still be no recovery because the insurance policy issued by American Family has an exclusion and limitation.
Even though the legislature attempted to put it in a situation where there would be a recovery.
No, I disagree with that premise that the legislature tried to put it in a position where there would be recovery. All the legislature did was try to clear up this notion of is a government employee uninsured or not? Are they self-insured as a practical matter, as found in the Corson case, or are they uninsured? And that's the sole, I don't think there's any evidence in the uncodified law or the legislative record to indicate that there was any purpose behind that other than to clarify that this person is an uninsured motorist, period. Not that you're legally entitled to recover from the uninsured motorist, because that's a different question.
I would be willing to bet you, if you listen to the tapes of the discussion of this, the presentation was that this was an attempt to allow citizens who were injured by the mistakes of governmental employees to recover if they had in place their own uninsured and underinsured.
I've seen no indication of that anywhere, and it certainly isn't in the uncodified law, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Maddox. Mr. Van Emmen, you've saved just about 3 minutes of your time.
Thank you.
Counsel for American Family mentioned that perhaps American Family would respond to consumer demand if somehow the insureds of the world got upset that they couldn't recover against immune government employees. I would suggest that American Family would be better off responding to the legislature who passed this law in 2001, 13 months before this accident, rather than using a 1996 policy form which used antiquated, legally entitled to recover language. That's really one of the reasons we're here, because they're not keeping up with the times. Not only did they use a 1996 policy form, I believe the uninsured motorist statute changed between 1996 and 2001, and then again in 2001, so they're just not updating their policies, and they're not keeping up with the times.
But if they were to update their policies and use the same language, we would still be here.
That's true, but if they were a good insurance company, they wouldn't use that language, and they certainly wouldn't be making the argument that they can cross out a section of the statute, B5, which talks about governmentally immune tortfeasors being
their argument uninsured. Is essentially all you have is a definition and not a right to recover by B5.
That might be their argument, but they're wrong, because their method of getting around the definition is no different than them putting a definition in their policy saying an uninsured motorist does not include a governmentally immune tortfeasor. I mean, that the effect of what they're trying to do with this antiquated legally entitled to recover is just to redefine what an uninsured motorist is, and they can't do that.
If we eliminate the insurance issue here and your client sued the city and the other officer for damages, could he recover?
If we were not in an uninsured motorist situation?
No insurance involved.
No, there'd be immunity.
Okay. And so I thought uninsured motorist coverage was supposed to put the person in the shoes they would be in if there had been insurance. Doesn't that put that person in a different position? Doesn't that put your client in a different position if we read the statute as you want us to apply it?
It puts my client in the exact position the legislature told everybody to put them in, and that is immune tortfeasors, governmentally immune tortfeasors, are uninsured motorists. And they made a public policy decision to do that. The state's a big place.
Are there other uninsured motorists against whom someone cannot recover?
I'm sorry.
Well, I think Mr. Maddox's argument is that the fact that the legislature says that city is essentially an uninsured motorist isn't into the question. That the next question is, can someone recover against that person with their uninsured motorist coverage?
I understand your question now.
Okay, so
I don't think there's any other categories of uninsured motorists that really come into play here, which is why the legislature dealt with this very serious governmental immunity situation. The legislature wants the citizens of Ohio to be able to recover when they get injured by police officers on emergency runs, paramedics, et cetera. I mean, this leaves the entire state open for no recovery, because they can't recover because they wouldn't be allowed to because of immunity in a liability setting, and then they wouldn't be allowed to recover in the UM setting. The entire state is left vulnerable.
But that argument goes against your answer to my previous question. You're saying that anyone then who is injured by the General Assembly has said that anyone now who is injured by a person employed by the city can sue the city and recover.
No.
There's insurance involved.
No. They can only sue their uninsured motorist carrier and recover.
Whereas the other person who's not, doesn't have a coverage at all, can't do that, cannot do that.
If they're not smart enough to buy coverage, Your Honor,
Do you think the General Assembly really thought that through that way?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But when they define B1 as an uninsured motorist, as someone who doesn't have liability, B1 still requires a legally retired entitled to recover finding. So you're drawing a definitional distinction between B1 and B5.
Not really. If there is some other thing or condition that would say somebody is not legally entitled to recover and they're in part one, they don't have any liability coverage, then you might be right. But that's not this case. This case deals with a governmentally immune tortfeasor. I mean, American Family's argument leads us to the conclusion that they could put conditions in their policy to limit recovery if the tortfeasor had red pants, or the tortfeasor was of a particular race, or if the tortfeasor had a mental illness. I mean, they're saying there's absolutely no limitations to what they can do. They can completely eliminate Part B, items 1 through 5, including governmental immunity. I mean, that's just legislating. And the Court of Appeals legislated from the bench by crossing out that provision of the statute.
Or the simple answer is that they were simply making clear that self-insured government was not considered uninsured, or was considered uninsured.
But why would they say that if they didn't mean for the result to be that citizens could recover under that setting? They're telling, by doing that, the legislature is telling the insurance companies, you can't eliminate coverage for governmentally immune tortfeasors. I mean, it seems very plain to me that that's what they were doing. Why else would it be in there? If the insurance companies could do it anyway, why put that in there? Insurance companies are very creative at excluding coverage and limiting coverage in uninsured motorist settings. So they don't, you know, they'll do it on their own if they want to. The legislature put this in there to keep them from doing that. And it's a very serious public policy situation. All of the citizens of Ohio are at risk. Anytime a police officer or an ambulance driver or a fire truck injures them.
You use your time. Thank you, Mr. Van Emmen. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.